This is your AEW Revolution 2020 review, Sound Off Extra edition. I am Solomonster. AEW Revolution from the Wintrust Arena in Chicago, Illinois. AEW sure does love their Chicago shows. Had a whole bunch of them so far. I could see why. Great crowd tonight in Chi-Town for what I thought on the whole was an excellent show. Not a perfect show, but an excellent show. This was a nice palate cleanser after what we had in Saudi Arabia on Thursday. So a very fun show. They had the fans in the crowd wearing LED lights. I'm sure you must have noticed. I don't know if they were bracelets or what exactly it was. I think they were LED wearable bracelets is what I assume it must have been. These people were lighting up all night long. And we're going to get into the whole review here, recap of tonight's show. Real quick, just want to let everybody know, for those who are interested, once the Super Chats leave the screen here, there is a sale ongoing on Pro Wrestling Tees for everyone's store, not just mine. Everyone. So if there's a favorite wrestler that you have, another podcast, or the Sound Off, you can get gear for 20% off now through Monday afternoon. Go to ProWrestlingTees.com/SolomonsterSoundsOff, 20% off. When you use the code MADNESS, it is the Merch Madness Sale. So you can vote in the poll right now at Solomonster on Twitter. You guys can let me know what you thought of tonight's pay-per-view. There aren't too many AEW pay-per-views during the year. Only four. This is one of the their big shows of the year. They've been building now for weeks and weeks and weeks to this Chris Jericho-John Moxley championship match. And the question I had about a month ago was, what are they going to do to keep this thing interesting? You know, I thought maybe Moxley would join the Inner Circle, and he didn't. He said he was going to, and the same night he turned on Jericho. But they found a way to keep, you know, the back and forth interesting between the two of them. And the big payoff was tonight, we do have a new AEW champion. His name is John Moxley. They did do the title change. Chris Jericho's title reign is over, which... yeah, it felt like the right time to do it. I am a little sad. I did enjoy Jericho's run. And who's to say he won't get it back? But the people loved it. That people popped huge for the title change. Moxley cut a promo when the show was over. I'll get into that a little bit later on. Go to Solomonster, at Solomonster on Twitter. Vote in the poll. Smash that like button on the video. And yes, Super Chats, as you can see, are open. If you would like to support the show and donate, you'll be seeing them popping up on your screen throughout the night. Got the $5 disappointed Solomonster, although I am not disappointed tonight. I'm actually very happy with what I just saw. Let me run through some of these early ones here before we get going. A. Lavelle, thank you for the $20. Appreciate it. Matthew Dickey with the $10. Jackal with the Super Chat. James Hollins. Eugene Morgan with $20. Thank you, Eugene. And Suave Titan with the $5, who says Kenny Omega put on the best singles match and tag team match in a very long time in the same week. Yeah, Kenny Omega is one of the VIPs, or MVPs, maybe we call them MVPs. He was one of the stars of the show. You know, if I had to make a list of the top three people who I think really came across on this show, their stock really rose on the show tonight, and they really came away feeling like a big deal in no particular order. Hangman Page, Orange Cassidy, and Darby Allin. And what's cool about that, not one of those names are former WWE guys. So yes, they have Jericho, and yes, they have Moxley, and they have Dustin Rhodes and Jake Hager, Cody. These are all former WWE talents first. Hangman Page is a hometown, not hometown, he's a homegrown guy in AEW, right? He's an AEW original, not a WWE guy. And I say AEW original, obviously he spent time in Ring of Honor, in New Japan, but he's an AEW guy. You know, he said, I'm not interested in WWE, I want to go to AEW and make a career for myself there. And he is as over now as he has ever been. Orange Cassidy. Orange Cassidy opened up a lot of eyes tonight. Orange Cassidy should have shut a lot of people up tonight who said, this guy's got no place being in this company, he's all comedy. People can't take him seriously. Why did they sign him to a contract? Why is he employed? You got a taste of why tonight. People are into him. And for the first time, we got to see him wrestle a serious match, and I thought he and Pac tore the house down. They had one of the most fun matches on the entire show. And then there's Darby Allin. And I would put Hangman and Darby as the top two who really have the potential to one day be world champions. I mean, the sky's the limit for the two of them. Darby Allin is ridiculously over with the AEW audience right now. He came out tonight. From the moment he came out, the match he had with Sammy Guevara that I'm going to talk about in a second, and when the match was over, you see the crowd reaction to him. Place is going nuts. Those are the three names who I think they made not only made a great impression, their stock rose by 1,000% tonight. Hangman Page, Orange Cassidy, and Darby Allin. So let's get into it here. The pre-show, the buy-in, was SCU, Frankie Kazarian, and Scorpio Sky against Stu Grayson and Evil Uno of the Dark Order. No real developments tonight as far as the Exalted One. I didn't think there would be. And obviously, if it's going to be an ex-WWE guy, and I'm not 100% sure that it will be. I'm not sure it's going to be Matt Hardy. I'm not sure it's going to be, you know, Brody Lee. You know, maybe it's Lance Archer. Who knows? We're going to see Lance Archer on Dynamite this Wednesday. I believe he's going to be making his debut appearance. But if it is a former WWE guy, they couldn't appear tonight anyway. Harper's contract does not allow him to appear until next month. Matt Hardy's contract is over in 15 minutes. So unless he re-signed, if he took the NXT deal that supposedly was offered to him, then I guess he's sticking around. But if not, if he has not signed with WWE, Matt Hardy's a free agent in 15 minutes. So who knows? Maybe we'll see him pop up on TV in the next few weeks. What we did get, though, was a decent match. I really didn't think this was anything special. I'd say it was okay. You know, the match was fine. It was, you know, pre-show match. Kazarian got pulled outside the ring. Scorpio Sky went for a cradle, got a two count. And Evil Uno caught him with a lariat to the back of the head. Stu Grayson cradled Scorpio Sky for the pin. And the Dark Order, they were beating down SCU. All of a sudden, we hear Colt Cabana's music. And out comes Colt Cabana in his hometown of Chicago. He got a nice reaction. He comes down to the ring. He gets overwhelmed by the Dark Order. And all of a sudden, we see this hooded figure emerge from the back. And I had a feeling it was Chris Daniels, because the hooded figure wasn't a terribly large person, you could tell. They weren't very tall. And we hadn't seen Chris Daniels. He was not part of this match. So, hooded figure comes out. I don't know if this was done intentionally as a takeoff of the stories that Chris Daniels was once considered for the higher power 20 years ago in WWE. Anyway, he pulled the hood off, and it was Chris Daniels, and he ran into the ring and attacked the Dark Order. So it appears that all the teasing about Chris Daniels and where does his allegiance lie, it was all just a little swerve just to throw you off. And it seems as though he is united with SCU. And the people cheered, and that was it. So we'll have to wait and see exactly who the Exalted One is. The main card opened with Dustin Rhodes against Jake Hager, who had quite the steamy makeout session with Mrs. Hager at ringside. His wife, not his mother. That would be weird. I mean, maybe that's the way they do things down south. I don't know, but no, this was his wife. He was practically eating her face. Now, she's a very attractive woman. I mean, I can't say that I blame him. She's a model. She's a very pretty woman. Actually, I think she was a wrestler at one point. I don't know if she still wrestles, but I believe at one point she was in developmental. They've been married for many years, so yeah, they're having a makeout session at ringside. I don't know why they opened with this. That was my first thought as I'm watching this match. I don't know why they're opening the show with this. You could have opened with Sammy and Darby, you know, and gotten that show off to a hot start. You could have opened with Pac and Orange Cassidy. I actually think it was kind of smart keeping that where it was. Nice little buffer to the main event. I would not have opened the show with this, though. You know, Dustin was wearing a shirt that said, "I'm here to fight Jericho's bitch," before tearing it off. There is no more singlet for Hager. This was Jake Hager's first match. The first time we're seeing him in the ring here in AEW. He's been standing silently in the background, has not said a word, has not wrestled. He's thrown a couple of low blows. He broke Dustin's arm. And that's about it. So this was our first opportunity here to see him in action. The singlet, the Jack Swagger singlet, is gone. He was wearing tights, although JR did call him Swagger at one point, but he caught himself. And we had this opening exchange. Hager retreats to the outside. There was this whole flurry. He retreats out to the floor, and he walks over to his wife. He's gonna confer with his wife. Dustin comes over. He attacks Hager. He turns to Hager's wife in the front row, and she goes to take a swing at him. He grabs her arm and stops her, and he forces a kiss on Mrs. Hager. And he's smearing his makeup all over her face in the process. Basically, he sexually assaulted this woman. She was disgusted, and the fans cheered this. They were very happy to see this. So Dustin hits a couple of bulldogs, hits a power slam. Hager goes for a Vader bomb, misses it, nails it on the second attempt, and hits a gut wrench for a near fall. So Dustin puts Hager up over the top rope. And as Hager is falling down to the floor, his face collides with the steps. So you hear the great sound of his face colliding with the steps. Dustin hit a destroyer, one of his new favorite moves. Not the last time you would see a destroyer on this show. Oh no. Not hardly the last time you'd see a destroyer on this fucking show. Tried for the cross arm breaker. And anyway, we get to the point where Aubrey Edwards is the referee. Her back is turned. Hager hits a low blow, uses a head and arm choke. Every time I see that head and arm choke, I think of Sam Shaw in Impact. Impact Wrestling. Yes, I was watching Impact during the Sam Shaw era. That was, I think, the last time I was consistently watching Impact every week, was the Sam Shaw era. And Dustin went out. I didn't like that finisher when Sam Shaw was using it. And I don't like it now. I don't think it makes for a good pro wrestling finisher. I just don't. Not today, it doesn't. Dustin goes out. Aubrey Edwards calls for the bell. The match itself, I thought the match was okay. It was fine. It really wasn't anything special. Again, this is not the match that I would have opened this show with. We got an advertisement announcing a special edition of Dynamite on March 25th in Newark, New Jersey. It's coming here to the tri-state area. And they are calling this episode of Dynamite Blood and Guts, playing off Vince McMahon's comments on that investor call many months ago where he was asked about AEW and he said, TNT, I don't really think they're going to like that blood and guts stuff. Well, they like it enough to give it to us on March 25th. And they're going to be doing their own version of War Games, one cage surrounding two rings. Obviously, they cannot call it War Games. And there's been some talk about Cody, I think, trademarking the name The Match Beyond. And I don't know if they called it that in the ad, but I'm pretty sure that's the name they're going to use. They're going to call it The Match Beyond. But this will basically be their version of War Games coming to free TV in a month. Let's run through some more of these super chats here before I fall too far behind. I do thank you all for the support. Jacob Donnelly, thank you for the $10. Says, I can imagine Vince's face right now. Look at what he wasted with Moxley. I don't believe Vince McMahon was watching AEW Revolution. Look, there were plenty of people in WWE, I'm sure, including talent and executives, who were paying attention to tonight's show. I guarantee you, Vince McMahon was not one of them. Vince McMahon did not have BR Live on his iPad back at the McMansion where he lives. So right now, I don't think he cares. Trey Knight 94, thank you for the $2. Paul E with the $5 super chat. Ryan W with the $20. Thank you very much. Best pay-per-view in years. It was a very enjoyable show. Food Hive with the $5. Thank you. Mexi Wolf 009 with the $10. And Brian Becerra with the $10. We have Sammy Guevara and Darby Allin. This match was absolutely nuts. This match was bonkers. I thought this was just a great spotlight on the young talent that this company has and really should focus on going forward. I thought this was just fantastic. And Darby Allin, again, the big takeaway, I think, coming out of this match, not to take anything away from Sammy, because I think Sammy is great. I like Sammy Guevara. I like the vlog stuff that he does. He's got a charisma about him in the ring. He's excellent. But Darby Allin has something right now that not very many people have. He's got this connection with the audience, this just weird vibe about him. And I think the fact that he just doesn't give a shit when he's in the ring and he'll just throw his body around, I think people appreciate that. He's got something. They've got something in him. He's going to be one of the biggest stars in this entire company. So right from the get-go, when he comes out, Darby hits this tope suicida out of the ring, hits the shotgun dropkick into the barricade. He goes, now, this was nuts. And this is what I was just talking about, where he puts his body at risk, sometimes very stupidly, and this was one of those times. So he drapes Sammy over the barricade outside. Sammy is hanging there. And Darby gets into the ring. He's going for another tope. Goes for a tope through the ropes, but it looked like his foot at the last second on the way out, as he's soaring through the middle of the ropes, caught the top rope, and it kind of stalled his momentum just a little bit. And he missed Sammy, and he crashed and burned, head first on the floor. He came up short. And the announcers didn't even try to hide it. They're like, I don't think he caught Sammy at all, Tony Schiavone said. He caught nothing but the barricade maybe in the floor. And I laughed, but it scared me. And the reason it scared me, and correct me if I'm wrong in the chat, but was it Laparca, I believe, who just passed away not too long ago? It's a Mexican wrestler back in, was November, I think it was in November, who did the exact same move in a match down in Mexico, fell just short. I don't remember if his foot also may have hit the rope, stalled his momentum, but he went for a tope through the ropes, went for a suicide dive, fell short. And what really hurt him there is the fact they have the solid barricade, right? They don't have, like, they have the solid barricades in WWE as well, like those hockey barricades. They don't have them in AEW. But his head hit in just the right spot, and he broke his neck, and it was just a really bad situation. And he ended up, it was a couple months later, but he died. I mean, he passed away as a result of those injuries. So, you know, you watch him do, and the tope, everybody does a tope now. It's almost like a basic move, but it's so dangerous. And so that was my first thought, oh my God. You know, just the way that he landed, it scared the shit out of me. Yeah, thank you in the chat. It was Laparca 2. Because some people thought it was the Laparca from WCW. It wasn't. But I believe that was the move where he got gravely injured and ultimately a couple of months later died. So, you know, we can laugh about it because Darby was okay, but that scared the fuck out of me. So Sammy grabs the skateboard that Darby had taken to the ring with him. It had Sammy's name spray painted on it. And Sammy takes the skateboard and he chucks it at Darby's face, just wrecked him with it, threw it right at his head. Sammy sets up a table outside, lays Darby on top of it. And heads up top, hits an insane 630 splash down through the table. These guys were just, they were not letting up. It was one big move after another. Darby somehow made it back into the ring in time. And now the bell finally rang. I didn't even realize the bell didn't ring. I just assumed the match was already underway, but apparently not. So finally the bell rings and we're underway. Sammy hits a running knee, goes for the quick pin. Darby kicks out. Sammy hits a double stomp off the top rope onto Darby on the apron. Couple minutes later, Sammy hit a Spanish fly off the top rope. He almost lost his balance, but he maintained it. Hit the Spanish fly. Sammy exposed one of the turnbuckles. He got thrown into it on a monkey flip by Darby. Darby hit a stunner. And then he hit the coffin drop. You know, he doesn't always hit it. Sometimes they move out of the way. They get the knees up. But he hit the coffin drop and got the pin. And I like that, too. I like the fact that Sammy did not kick out of the coffin drop. That has been established as his finisher. That's been established as his signature move. And I like the fact that he hit one coffin drop and he got the pin. And the place went nuts. And Darby had grabbed the skateboard. He was going to do some more damage to Sammy. Jake Hager came back out, made the save, and rescued Sammy Guevara. This was a great display of why they need another singles title, I think, in AEW for the men. I know we've talked about this before, and I do think we're going to get one at some point in the next several months, next few months. Cody has all but said that they're going to introduce some kind of new championship. He just hasn't said if it's going to be a singles title for the men or what it's going to be. All he kind of told the Observer was it's something that's never been done before. So I have no idea what that means, but they need a secondary title for the mid card in this company. And I think that it's tailor-made for somebody like Darby Allin. You know, because Darby's not going to be wrestling Jon Moxley, I don't think, anytime soon for the world title. So I think this was something, just absolutely something that somebody like him could benefit from. The dude's a fucking star. Point blank. Plain and simple. I thought this match was awesome. Speaking of awesome, Kenny Omega and Hangman Page against the Young Bucks for the AEW Tag Team titles. This was, I call it the Tag Team Match of the Year. It's almost a joke. We're not even in March. Actually, in 3 minutes, it'll be March 1st. Point is, it's very early in the year, so of course, it's going to be the Tag Team Match of the Year. It might be the Tag Team Match of last year. This was off the charts. I thought this match was great. I will say, I am not a fan of the constant destroyers. I'm not a fan of that. It is a move that has been completely bastardized in NXT, in AEW. This is hardly just an AEW problem. This isn't WWE. This isn't AEW. This is an overused move that is rarely, if ever, even used as a finish. Breaks my heart the way that this move has been bastardized. But I think we got three or four destroyers in the first three matches on this card alone. But that aside, I cannot say enough good things about this match. This was, if I had to just describe it and boil it down to kind of a one sentence description, half an hour of tag team excellence is what this match was. Star of the match had to be Hangman Page. They actually booed the Young Bucks. The people booed the Bucks late in the match, more than a few times. And I thought the Bucks were acting more heelish as the match went on. At first, they didn't want to be too aggressive. Right? Oh, we're all buddies. We're all pals. It's the Elite. So they didn't want to be too aggressive. Hangman hocked a loogie right in Matt Jackson's face, and that was it. The gloves were off at that point. Matt lost his shit. He went after Hangman. They couldn't pull him off. Hangman went to slam Matt through the timekeeper. He's going to powerbomb him through the timekeeper's table on the outside. Omega talked him out of it. There was a moonsault by Hangman. He took out both Bucks on the outside, landed right on his feet. So he pulled a Charlotte Flair. Except on the outside, you're supposed to land on your feet. It's like that corkscrew moonsault that Charlotte will do. See, that looks good. You know, on those big matches when we see Charlotte bust that out, that's fine. It's when she does it in the ring. She did it again on Wednesday with Bianca Belair. It's like, it's just, I can't get over it. Anyway, Hangman, he hit the moonsault. So there was a point in the middle of this match where Hangman, he connects to Nick Jackson with what the announcers called. This is what they called it. They called it a villainous kick to the knee of Matt Jackson. And Hangman then applied the chicken wing as an homage to the villain, Marty Skrull, which could mean something, or it can mean nothing at all. I just thought that was very interesting. You know, we on NWA Power this week, they're building up the match at the Crockett Cup in April between Nick Aldis and Marty Skrull. And we had members of Villain Enterprises who even popped up on Power this week. And could we see that in AEW? You know, if those two companies, if those two promotions are willing to work together, could there be some kind of, relationship between AEW and Ring of Honor? Where Marty Scurll, even though he just signed with ROH, could potentially make appearances in AEW? Or again, is this just a friend of Marty's busting out one of his moves? I guess we'll have to wait and see. See, the thing is, in wrestling today, nothing would shock me. We see promotions working together all the time, even WWE now, you know, some of the promotions in the UK that they work with and stuff. Nothing at this point would shock me. So I would say that anything is possible. Nick Jackson hit a 450, and Matt Jackson covered for the two count. We saw Hangman hit a blockbuster superplex for a two count on Nick. There were V triggers in here, and Omega hit the Tiger Driver 98 for a near fall. Omega teased a one-winged angel from the second rope. Nick reversed it into a poison rana. Matt Jackson hit three Northern Lights suplexes on Adam Page on the ramp. And the Bucks hit Page with the Indy Taker on the ramp. Bucks hit a double V-trigger to Kenny Omega inside the ring, who did the Fighting Spirit kick out at one, and the crowd popped huge for that. Second V-trigger, though, put him down for a two count. Bucks were teasing a Meltzer driver. Hangman recovered. He grabbed, was it Nick Jackson? I think it was Nick Jackson. And Nick Jackson was on the apron. Again, they're getting ready to hit the Meltzer driver. And Hangman sneaks up, and he kind of gets him in a position for a power bomb and carries him over. There was a table set up outside the ring, and he power bombs Nick Jackson through the table. And I assume Nick wasn't the legal man, because if he was, and the referee was being awfully lenient on that one, the referee was not doing their job. But it's possible he wasn't the legal man. Page and Omega hit the Buckshot V-trigger. Matt kicks out. There were a lot of... I will say that down the stretch, probably two or three too many kickouts here. But I love this match so much that that didn't bother me too much. It did bother me, but it didn't bother me too much. Omega teased the one-winged angel. Couldn't hit the move. He was selling it like his shoulder was hurt. His shoulder may have gone out on him. Hangman tagged in, hit a one-winged angel of his own on Matt. I thought that was it. Nick made the save at the last second. Buckshot lariats to both Bucks, and Adam Page pins Matt Jackson for the win. Kenny Omega and Hangman retained the tag team titles. After the match, everybody was all buddy-buddy, and the Bucks went over to Omega for a handshake, and he was kind of hesitant, but eventually he agreed, and Adam Page, he was out on the apron. He refused to take part in this, but there was a great tease here, because we did not have the miscommunication spot here in this match where, you know, Hangman accidentally hit Omega, or Omega accidentally hit Hangman. But as all of this was going on, Hangman drops his tag title belt, and he is teasing that he's going to do a buckshot lariat and vault himself into the ring and nail Kenny Omega. And as Omega turns around, he thinks better of it. He says, oh, we're cool. Everything's cool. That little tease. They're still teasing it out. I like that. I like that. And, you know, before Moxley won the championship in the main event, I even tweeted about this earlier. I'm looking at how over this guy is. I'm looking at how over Adam Page is right now. And if I were AEW, it would make me very hesitant to pull the trigger just yet on a heel turn, because he is that popular. And I was almost thinking, maybe you actually do keep the title on Jericho. And you let Jericho go the full year as the champion. And build it to where Hangman gets another title match with Jericho at All Out in August. He kind of comes full circle 1 year on the anniversary of their first match. When Hangman was not ready for that last year, this year he is. And then he's the one to beat Jericho and win the championship. Now they can't do that, obviously, because Jericho lost the belt. But he's that popular right now where I think if they wanted to, they could have probably found a way to drag this out long enough and build it to the one-year anniversary. You know, but... I still think there's still a world title in this guy's future. Hangman is, you know, he's in that top three of guys to watch that I talked about at the top of the stream here. His stock is soaring in this company. Let's do some more Super Chat shout-outs. Super Chats are open if you are new to the stream here, and if you do care to participate in that way. Mackenzie Lambert, thank you for the $2. And we got a lot of new subscribers here in this stream, too. The Cheeseburger. The Cheeseburger 666 with the $5. His Scorpio Sky is the exalted one. I don't know about that, but I don't think that would make sense. Dimeblade 17, thank you for the $5. And we have the infamous GS with the $5 as well. Devin Garcia, thank you. Holy shit. Devin Garcia with the $50. Wow. Here in the Super Chat, good luck WrestleMania, he says. LOL, Darby Allin, future star, John Moxley, congrats. Hope the Mets improve on behalf of Solomonster. Yeah, well, I hope for that every year, and every year I get burned, so I'm not holding out hope. But holy shit, Devin, thank you for the $50. That's awesome. Chris Quillman, thank you for the $5 spot. His favorite JR quote of the evening, Paige's DNA. Yeah, I forgot to mention that. So Paige's DNA dripping down Matt Jackson's face. That was fucking disgusting. That was fucking disgusting. That was when he hawked a loogie at Matt Jackson, and you could see the spit on his face just dripping down. And Jim Ross always trying to be dramatic on commentary. When you talk about DNA dripping down someone's face, I mean, for fuck's sake. JR. I mean, come on. Get this guy some Dippin' Dots here. He's got to calm down a little bit. Jesus. What a great visual that is, huh? Will Rob, thank you for the $15. Says Solomonster, take this super chat and buy yourself your favorite beverage, and hopefully you can wash the taste of that Saudi show out of your mouth. Yeah, it's already gone. I'm in a good mood right now. Let's not mention that, please. And we'll do more of these later. Nyla Rose and Chris Statlander for the AEW Women's Championship. This match did not stand a chance following that tag team championship match. I thought the match had its moments, a few moments late. I didn't think this was very good. And you know, when I mentioned that on Twitter, I had people saying, it was fine, it was good. Why are you crapping on the women's match for it? Because it wasn't very good. It's okay to admit that. This was not very good. I've seen Chris Statlander in much better matches than this. This was a styles clash between these two. They just, especially late down the stretch, they just either weren't on the same page or, oh, I know what happened. I mean, there were some spots late in the match that they shouldn't have done. Because she's trying to lift up a woman who was too big for her to lift up. It just wasn't working. So yeah, I didn't think this was very good. Statlander, early on, she was building some momentum. She went for a tope. There's another one. There's another tope through the ropes. She splatted. This one was, you know, they had the elevated ramp, as they do on these AEW pay-per-views, like the old WCW pay-per-views from the early 90s. So she splatted on the ring ramp. And Nyla took over at that point. So Nyla draped Statlander over the top rope. And she was teasing a missile drop kick off the top rope. Yeah, and by the way, I have to just say, somebody in the chat mentioned this. And this could very well have played a role in why the match wasn't as good as it was. They did mention on commentary that Statlander had been suffering from the flu during the week. I don't know if she's still sick. Even if she's not still sick, if she's just getting over the flu, if she was dehydrated, yeah, the flu can knock the shit out of you. So I will throw that out there. I'm not trying to shit on the match. I'm just saying it wasn't very good, and maybe the fact that she was sick did play a role. So that's fair. That's a fair point. They did bring that up on commentary, so that is worth mentioning. But it still wasn't very good. So she's draped over the ropes, and Nyla's teasing a missile drop kick. Statlander does a handstand. She does a handstand walk out of that position and then lays on the mat and she blows a kiss. She blows a kiss up to Nyla Rose and she takes over at that point. She does the bop on the nose and hits a DDT. This may have been, this little 20 or 30 second stretch here may have been the best part of the whole match. She tried for the Big Bang Theory. Nyla blocked it, locked in an STF. Nyla gave it up, tried for a splash. Statlander got her knees up. And there was a beast bomb by Nyla for a near fall. And then she climbed up to the top rope. And this is where the botched superplex took place. Somebody in the just. You guys are terrible. Somebody in the chat says maybe Statlander has coronavirus. I hope not. She's going to be around that whole roster. I hope that. Can aliens get coronavirus? I hope not. Maybe she's immune. You know, that is the shitty thing about this coronavirus thing. As this thing spreads, and I'm going to do a whole thing on coronavirus on the podcast tomorrow because it's really having a big impact in Japan, and it could have an impact on WrestleMania. People aren't really talking about this right now. But the thing that sucks about it is you read about symptoms and all that, and, you know, if you're just walking around and you feel like you have a cold, you have a cough, you know? I tried to listen to a couple of those Observer radio shows recently because I haven't really listened to Meltzer's audio stuff in a while, and I hear he's coughed, he's like hacking a lung up. What the hell's going on with Meltzer? Is he okay? This guy's coughing up a storm. It's not like he was going to cough up a lung. I hope he's all right. I hope he doesn't have coronavirus. But anyway, the point is, like, how are you supposed to know? How are you supposed to differentiate if it's just a cough or if it's something more serious? You know, it's kind of scary. But anyway, they're on the top rope, and they went for a superplex. Statlander tried to superplex Nyla Rose from the top rope. She just, it just wasn't working. I don't know if it was her positioning, if it was her footing. I think it was just the fact, frankly, that she couldn't support Nyla's weight. Nyla's bigger than her, and it looked, and maybe she's weak. She's been sick. She could not support her weight. And this was a dangerous spot because this could have ended very badly for both of them. So they fell. This ended up looking more like a brainbuster, but it could have been a hell of a lot worse the way that they landed. One or both of them could have easily gotten injured. So they went back up to the top rope again about a minute later. And this time, I thought they were going to try to redo the spot. I said, boy, you're tempting fate. This time, Statlander went for a Rana, and Nyla held on to her, tried to muscle her up into a powerbomb position, almost lost her. This almost turned into disaster number two. She almost dropped her and fell with her. If she would have slipped and fallen off that rope with all of her weight landed right on top of her, that would have been it for Chris Statlander. So she hit some semblance of a beast bomb, kind of, got the pin. This just, it fell apart in the end. It fell apart. I don't know what else to say. There you see Minoru Suzuki making an appearance here on the stream. I will murder, he says. Thank you, Professor Bro, for the Suzuki Super Chat. Then we get to Cody and MJF. Maxwell Jacob Friedman. Downstate played Cody's Kingdom theme live. They had announced in advance that he was going to be sung out to the ring, his live entrance music. But the real story here, the real story is not Downstate performing Cody to the ring. The real story isn't even Jon Moxley being the new AEW champion. The real story is Cody's neck tattoo. Yes, Cody has new ink. He has fresh ink on his neck. It's the logo or the symbol, I guess, for the Nightmare family that he trains with. As far as my thoughts on it, you know what? It's still only the second worst tattoo that I've seen this week. Second to whatever the hell that thing is on Jack Gallagher's chest. Holy shit. What the hell did he do? I'm going to show you Cody in a second. I wish I had clipped the picture of Jack Gallagher. You got to see this tattoo. But as far as Cody goes, it's not even that like I dislike the way the tattoo looks. I think it looks whatever. I mean, it's got the colors and the skull and everything. It looks cool enough. But I mean, let me show you what, if you didn't see it, or if you want an up-close view of it, here's one photo of it. You'll see it on your screen here in a second. So there it is. There you see Cody's neck tattoo. You know, hey, I'm a big fan of skulls. So as far as a tattoo is concerned, I've seen worse. But the neck. It's like when Mike Tyson got the face tattoo. Why the face? The face, the neck. Hey, some people can make it work. Hey, remember Undertaker had his wife's name tattooed on his Adam's apple? That was a bad decision. Especially when he divorced his wife. Had to have that shit lasered off from his Adam's apple. But there it is. Here's another, show you another image here. That's him getting it. So for the people wondering, oh, maybe it's a temporary tattoo. Nope. This looks like permanent ink to me. So that's Cody's new artwork there. Hey, look, what it's his body. Whatever makes the guy happy. But the neck? Yeah. That's a hard no for me. There's, well, anyway, you can chime in the chat. Let me know what you think of the tattoo. So Cody came into the match with a broken big toe. He broke it on the moonsault at the end of the cage match that he had with Wardlow last week, or 2 weeks ago. So they said that he broke his big toe, and or so they say. You know, it came into play here in this match. I'm not convinced that, frankly, it wasn't just part of the show. It could be a legitimate injury, but once I saw it being incorporated into the match here, made me wonder if it was a legitimate injury at all to begin with. There was one point in the match where MJF pulled off Cody's boot, and he bit down on the supposedly broken toe. He bit down on Cody's sweaty sock. You got chance of you sick fuck. Tommy Dreamer got the same chance at the indie show that I was at a few years ago for biting Matt Riddle's foot. The difference is that Riddle does not wear socks. That was more disgusting than this. He put all of Riddle's toes in his mouth and bit down, because Tommy Dreamer is a sick fuck. Tommy Dreamer is the same guy who once drank Undertaker's tobacco chew on Monday Night Raw. You remember the face the Undertaker made when he watched this? I've never seen the Undertaker more disgusted in my life. So much so that that's one of the super chats. It's not a set dollar amount. It's one of the random super chats. It's possible it may pop up on your screen here tonight. Disgusted Undertaker. I'll never forget that as long as I live. MJF came out here. He was glowing. He looked radioactive with this tan. Looked completely unnatural. So there Cody's going after him early. MJF is just ducking, he's diving, he's jumping out of the ring trying to get away. And at one point he flicked the fan's hat off his head. I think he threw a beer at a fan or on a fan. And Cody hit a Cody cutter. So he leaves the ring. Right? I think MJF was on the ramp. Cody leaves the ring, he's on the ramp, he runs down the ramp. I thought he was going to pull a, was it Muda? Was it Muda that time who did the, had the match with Hogan in Japan? It's one of these classic matches. And I think it was Muda, and he runs all the way down the ramp at full speed. Hogan's by the ropes. Muda then stops himself, turns around, makes a beeline back to the ring. So you get this wide shot of Muda running down to the ring and then clotheslining Hogan over the rope into the ring. It's actually great. It's a great spot. Cody basically did the same spot here. He went all the way to the back. He went into the tunnel, came back out, ran down the ramp, and then clotheslined MJF into the ring. So Wardlow's out there. He pulls MJF out of the ring to safety. Brandy grabs a beer. I don't know where she got this beer from. I guess she took it from somebody in the crowd. It's like half a beer. She takes this cup of beer, walks over to Wardlow, splashes it in his face. I assume it was beer. It could have been apple juice. It could have been piss. They do that at sporting events in some cities, probably Philly. Always Philly. Throw urine on people. Whatever it was, she chucked it in Wardlow's face. Cody hit a dive. He took Wardlow out on the outside. MJF used his Salt of the Earth Fujiwara armbar, tried for the submission. Cody got to the ropes. He bit down on the bottom rope, forced a rope break. And Cody sent MJF to the floor, hit the disaster kick, went for a dive, or at least Cody was teasing a dive. Wardlow stepped in the way. Arn Anderson has seen enough. Coach Arn, he grabs a chair. He's going to scare off Wardlow. So as all of this is going on, it felt like they were stalling. I'm like, what's going on here? And about 10 seconds later, I realize MJF comes up. He's all bloody. He was on the other side of the ring blading. He did a blade job. And he did a number on himself. He comes up. Blood's just pouring down his face. And Brandy tried for a crossbody off the apron onto Wardlow. I don't know what she expected to do here. Wardlow's about four times her size, weight-wise. It's a big dude. She does a crossbody. Of course, he catches her. Got her in position for an F5. Cody said, you better put her down. And in the midst of all of this, Cody accidentally hit Arn Anderson. I think he kicked Arn Anderson in the head. Knocked Arn down. Arn took a bump. Back in the ring, MJF hits a low blow, gets a near fall. They did the suplex out over the top rope. They did the Bret Hart Dynamite Kid spot. That's a dangerous spot. Cody looked like he took a bad landing on the way down. You know, where one guy suplexes the guy and they both go tumbling out to the floor. So they both make it back inside before the count of 10. MJF hit the double cross for a near fall. And MJF takes off Cody's weight belt. And Paul Turner, the referee, takes the weight belt away from him. Cody hits a low blow. Paul Turner did not see. And Cody uses a vertebraker for a near fall. Cody gets the weight belt. He's going to use it as a weapon. The referee says no. Says you can't use it as a weapon. And Cody is begging him. He's saying, just once. Just let me use it one time. And what does Paul Turner, the referee, do? He says, okay. And he walks away. Boy, MJF. I mean, he ended up winning the match, so I guess it doesn't matter. But had he lost, he would have a hell of a case for a protest here. Cody used the weight belt on him. So MJF is crawling over to Cody. He's grabbing Cody's feet. He's crying. He's begging for forgiveness. And then he pulls a Hangman Page, and he spits in Cody's face. So I guess, I don't know if JR said this, but apparently Cody had some of MJF's DNA dripping down his face. And Cody couldn't believe that he spat in his face. He hits the crossroads once, picks him back up, hits the crossroads again. That should have been enough, but he had to try for a third. Because he's a dumb babyface. MJF blocked, pulled the Dynamite Diamond ring out of his trunks, nailed Cody with it. Referee, of course, didn't see it. And MJF got the pin. Dumb babyface syndrome strikes and costs Cody the match. MJF picks up the win. So the question now is, you know, does the feud continue? Is this it between MJF and Cody? It doesn't feel like it. I think you could easily continue this out, possibly even to Double or Nothing in Vegas. You know, or does MJF move on and become number one contender? I don't know where he is in the rankings. I haven't checked the men's rankings on the AEW website. Maybe somebody can in the chat can go do that. But maybe they're going to build to a championship match between Cody and or between MJF and Moxley. But it just felt to me like we're not done with this yet. And the other thing to pay attention to is, you know, Arn Anderson took a bump off a miscue by Cody. So if Arn is going to turn on Cody at some point, it's very possible that what happened here in this match is going to play into that down the road. So as a match, I enjoyed this. I didn't think it was great. I thought it was very good. You know, maybe too much interference for my liking, but you know, I guess it kind of played into the story and the finish with MJF stealing the win. This was our first experience seeing MJF in an AEW ring in a real match. You know, a long pay-per-view quality match. They probably went 20 minutes. The longest match he's had yet in AEW. I thought he did fine. You know, the blood added a little something. And there should, frankly, there should have been blood. If you're going to have blood in a match, this is a grudge match. You've been building this match now for months. If ever there was going to be blood in a match, it should be a match like this. So I thought this was very good. Let's catch up with some of the super chats here. But we're not done yet. We got two big matches left to talk about. Willie Eichard, thank you for the $10. Vincent Millage with the $5. Mr. Wombat with the $15. Thank you. Says, my match with Pac was easily his favorite of the night. Yes, I changed. And I got back here to my little mini studio to do the stream just in time. So thank you for that. Trippy Boy with the $1.99. Cesar Enrique, thank you for the $1.99. Professor Bro with the super chat. Jared M, oh my god, people are crazy. Jared M with the $55 super chat. Are you out of your mind? Is that Jared Mysterio? Is that who I think it is? Thank you, Jared. You guys are out of your mind tonight. We're blowing it up tonight for the Revolution review. It's a party tonight with the super chats. Thank you very much. Austin Kinkle with the $5. And everybody who's subscribed, thank you. Hit that sub button if you are not subscribed. This is my third live stream in 4 days. So you will get the notifications when there is a new stream. We had the Bastard Pack against freshly squeezed Orange Cassidy. The best friends were at ringside in Cassidy's corner. We got a holy shit chant before they even touched. Later on, we had a fight forever chant. The crowd was, in a word, apeshit for this match. I loved it. I loved it. Of course, Orange Cassidy at first was giving the weak ankle kicks. Pac was Pac was trading the kicks with him. He was playing along, and the people were eating it up. The commentators were laughing. After a while, Pac said, "The hell with this," and he shoves down Orange Cassidy. So Cassidy put his hands in his pockets, and this is what, you know, he does a lot in the independent matches that I've seen him in. Excuse me. He'll do these incredible spots with his hands in his pockets. He'll do dives out of the ring. He'll do dives off the top rope. All of this just dangerous stuff where if he's going to take a fall, man, I'm losing my voice here. He can't break his fall with his hands. So he's absolutely out of his mind for doing it. But when you watch him do it, all these moves, the kip up and everything, he's got the hands in his pockets. It's incredible. It's incredible to watch. It's not easy. He makes it look easy. It's really not. It's not an easy thing to do. And look, that's his thing. You know, that's his gimmick. And it works for him, which is why I just don't understand all the hate that this guy gets. Like at the beginning, I can kind of understand. People said they signed who? Who is this Orange Cassidy guy? And you go and you watch, you're like, oh, he's a comedy act. I thought AEW was going to be different from WWE. I thought AEW was going to be more sports-like. They're going to have rankings. They're going to be different. Why are they bringing in a guy like him? Because they had no concept. They had never seen him before. And yeah, he's still a comedy figure. But I would hope that tonight he opened up some eyes. I'm not saying you have to like the guy, but to shit on him and say he doesn't deserve a job and all this other stuff, get over yourself. There's room for variety in this company. You've got a lot of very. Look, one of the things I liked about this match, him and Pac are the polar opposites. Pac comes out, he got a scowl on his face, he's all serious, he's pissed off at the world. Orange Cassidy is the complete opposite. He is a comedy act. So you had two polar opposites here in this match, and I think that's why it worked. He got sick of his shit, so he shoved him down. And then Orange Cassidy started busting out moves that we had never seen him do before in AEW. Hit a tope, hit a high cross off the top rope, a tornado DDT. Eventually he had the glasses on, the glasses came off. You know, somewhere in here the glasses went flying off. So Pac teased a Michinoku driver off the top rope. Cassidy blocked it. Hit a DDT off the top. And Pac tried to leave. He tried to escape. Trent threw him back inside. Cassidy hit an air raid crash for a near fall. All of a sudden, the Lucha Bros, Pentagon and Phoenix, they come running in. They're brawling to the back now with the Best Friends. And Pac ends up getting Orange Cassidy in the Brutalizer for the submission. So I don't think the outcome was ever in doubt. I don't think Pac should have lost. That would have been ridiculous. He won. It was the right outcome. But I put Orange Cassidy on that list I mentioned of the top three people who I think stood out the most today. Just listen to the crowd. You know, just listen to the crowd. He may not be your cup of tea, but to this audience, the reactions that he's getting and everything, I don't know what his segments do ratings-wise on TV. I'd have to look into that. But, you know, he's not really a featured attraction on the show. I'd be more concerned about that if they were putting him in a position to challenge for a championship or something. I can't see that until, you know, much later down the road. Hopefully, the character will evolve over time. You know, maybe a year from now, he's cutting promos. He can only stay silent and keep his hands in his pockets for so long, but right now, it's what works for him. How can you argue with the reactions that it's getting? Ride that horse until you can't ride it no more. And there will come a point where he's going to have to change his act up a little bit. But I thought this was great. This was one of the most enjoyable things on the entire show. And then it was time for the main event. Chris Jericho defending the AEW World Championship against Jon Moxley. Before I deep dive into this here, let me again just shout out the chat since we do have a lot of people tuning in live right now on YouTube. It is officially March 1st, by the way, 12:30 in the morning, at least here on the East Coast. I guess on the West Coast, it's still February, so haha. But it is now officially March 1st, and thank you for staying up late with me here tonight. We're going all the way to, well, I don't know when we're going to. Maybe 1 a.m., we'll see. But thank you for staying up late with me tonight, and for all the super chats. I do want to at least make sure I get everyone's name in here, for God's sakes. Paul Hamilton, $75 super chip. Paul Hamilton has become like my benefactor. He's donating every week on the main podcast. He just dropped $75 For God's sakes, here in the stream, says from the Portland pop star, keep up the great work. You are truly one of the VIPs, my friend. He's a good person too. I've gotten to know Paul a little bit, and he keeps in touch with me by email. And anytime WWE or even AEW, if they come to the Pacific Northwest, if they're up in that Portland area, he's the first person with a sound off sign in the crowd. I mean, he's awesome. So. My thanks to him, Brian, $5. Thank you. Lone Wolf with the $10. And KM Truth, thank you for the $10 super chat. So, Chris Jericho and John Moxley. They had a camera follow. I thought this was awesome. They had a camera follow Moxley from outside the arena all the way into the building, through the concourse, into the crowd, down into the ring. I thought the way they shot this was awesome, actually. It's like a big superstar entrance here. Jericho got the full, not orchestra, what was it? Choir. They had a choir singing his song, Judas. That doesn't sound right, though. That doesn't feel right, right? You got a choir singing Judas, and then anyway. So I was kind of hoping, actually, I don't know how many of you are aware of this. I wish I could play a clip. I don't know if I'd have her permission to, though, so I won't do it. But there's a woman, let me just see real quick here before I get into this, because this girl is very talented, and she sang her own version of, here it is, of Jericho's theme song. So when you're done here listening to this stream, go on YouTube and look it up. It's called Fozzy Judas. Her name is Mariah Page. It's exactly the way it sounds. Paige is P-A-I-G-E. And she's got her own YouTube channel. She's just sitting in front of a camera with her guitar, singing Judas. It is, I think it might be better than Chris Jericho's version of the song. It is an incredible rendition of, it's a, like a haunting, slow version of it, but it is an incredible version of Jericho. So I wish it was on Spotify or something. But anyway, leave a comment on her video on her channel and let her know what you think. Mariah Page. Everybody should go over there and check that out. So I wanted to give her a shout out here. So Jericho's music plays. Everybody is singing along. And they get the big superstar intros. Immediately, the two of them brawl into the crowd. This was basically New Japan Chris Jericho, the brawler. The Bruiser Brody version of Chris Jericho here, where he just brawls like a madman. He picked up the... one of the television cameras, he was filming with it while flipping off Moxley, something he's done multiple times in New Japan, and threw a guardrail at one point at Moxley, and Moxley was biting the stitches. Jericho had stitches on his face right by his eye. He got split open on Dynamite last week, and Moxley's biting at the stitches, and... Moxley then got busted open. I didn't see how it happened, but he got busted open by the eye. And so now he's bleeding all over the place under his eye patch. You know, it's funny, they have Blood and Guts on March 25th in Newark. We got Blood and Guts tonight. We had blood in, what, three different matches? We had blood in this match. We had blood in the MJF match. Didn't we have blood in another one? We might have had blood in one more match. I don't remember, but I feel like we have Blood and Guts tonight. Here on this show. So these guys are brawling all over the place on the outside, and Jericho power bombs him through the timekeeper's table that Hangman Page had tried to put Matt Jackson through earlier in the night. That was when Kenny Omega stopped him. So finally somebody went through the table. There was a point here where Jericho, I think, was going for the Lion Tamer, and Moxley countered it, and then Excalibur said, "Oh, it's that Randy Couture training," because if you watched the build-up video to the match, they showed Moxley at his gym in Vegas where he really does train. And I think it's Randy Couture's gym. And Randy Couture is in the video. He's teaching him moves and counters and, you know, how to counter out of this hold and that hold. And so he countered the Lion Tamer into a heel hook. So that did play into the match. So there was a paradigm shift coming. Moxley was going to finish him off. Santana and Ortiz, they get involved. They were out there. And I think it was Ortiz. Socks, no pun intended, socks Moxley with the loaded sock, the sock with egg yolks on the inside, or whatever. I don't even know why I said it the other night on the stream. I said, oh, he's got eggs in the sock. I have no idea why I said that. Just the visual of that, like when he whips somebody All of a sudden, the sock turns yellow. Who knows what's in the sock? Anyway, he hit Moxley with it, and Jericho hit a lion's salt for a near fall. Jericho tried for a code breaker. Moxley held on to him, put him in a Boston Crab. The walls of Jericho. Jake Hager ran down for the distraction. Moxley went to go after him. He turned around into a code breaker. Moxley kicks out at two. Jericho gets him in the walls. Moxley makes the ropes. Now Jericho's arguing with the referee. He is arguing with Aubrey Edwards. You'll notice, I think every Jericho match, Aubrey Edwards is the referee. She's like the go-to referee for Jericho. He wants her as the ref in all of his matches. She's like the Earl, what Earl Hebner used to be to like Shawn Michaels and Steve Austin. It's like all of their matches practically used to have Earl Hebner. So Aubrey Edwards is the designated Jericho referee. I think he slapped her on the ass. I think he smacked her on the ass at one point. I think he was trying to get himself disqualified. That, she was having none of it. So Hager threw a cheap shot at Moxley. Aubrey saw it. She ends up throwing the entire inner circle out. She boots them to the back. And while this is going on, Sammy Guevara, he lays out Moxley with the championship, runs away. Jericho crawls over and covers for a two count. Jericho rakes the good eye on Moxley. So Moxley is acting like he's blinded, right? He can't see. He's got the eye patch over the other eye. And Jericho goes for the Judas effect, gets countered by Moxley. Moxley hits the paradigm shift, and then he removes the eye patch, takes the eye patch off, and it's a miracle. Moxley can see. He's been healed. And the announcers talk about it like he's been healed now for weeks. He was faking it. He's been fine this entire time. Boy, that would really be stupid if you think about it, because Moxley has been wearing that eye patch for like a month. I guess the idea is that maybe in the last week or so he got healed up. He's been wearing that thing nonstop. That would annoy the shit out of me if that were me. If my eye was all healed. I mean, I guess the idea is that he wanted to go into the match and fool Jericho. But boy, that would annoy the shit out of me. And to his credit, you know, kayfabe is alive and well with Jon Moxley. He has been wearing that eye patch everywhere he goes. I've heard things that when he leaves the house in the morning, he wears the eye patch. If he goes for his morning run, if he goes for a cup of coffee, he's got that fucking eye patch on. That's a commitment. That's a commitment to his character. So, anyway, he hits the elevated paradigm shift, gets the pin, and Jon Moxley is your new AEW World Champion. Everybody is cheering. Everybody is celebrating. Everybody is so happy. And Moxley grabs a mic. Going to cut a promo post-match, and he's talking about, he mentions wrestling. I said the word wrestling, and he's really putting over AEW, and he's putting over the fans. And he's going on and on and on. It's almost like he's trying to stretch for time. And they start playing his music. It's like the fucking Oscars, where somebody's talking too long, and they try to play him off stage. So he didn't like that very much. He hears his music, and he goes, what the fuck? So they cut the music off. He's like, I'm not done yet. So he says, what the fuck? And then they turn the music off, and he really didn't have much more to say. He said, he said, it's time to knock back some whiskey. I got him beaten. I was knocking back whiskey before the main event tonight. So anyway, he goes off into the crowd to celebrate, and that was it. I mean, that was your show from top to bottom. I guess the question now is, what's next for Jon Moxley? You know, is there a rematch with Chris Jericho? Do they do it on TV? Do they do it at Double or Nothing? Does he move on to somebody else like MJF? Or do they introduce somebody new? Lance Archer is going to be making his debut on TV this week. Lance Archer, if they want, they can draw attention to the fact that these two guys have history in New Japan just in the last month or so. They had a match at Wrestle Kingdom at the beginning of January, and Moxley beat him for the United States Championship. Now, maybe they don't want to mention that. Maybe they don't want to draw any attention because they're not working with New Japan. But there is a history between these two guys. So maybe Archer comes in, he guns right away for Jon Moxley. Now, he can't get a title shot because they have a ranking system. They'd have to try to make sense of it. You know, but there's time between now and Vegas in May, Double or Nothing, if they wanted to build that up as a title match. I don't know what match you guys would prefer to see. You know? Moxley and MJF? Moxley and Lance Archer. Brody Lee might be on his way in soon. Darby Allin, he keeps winning. Maybe Darby Allin. You know, we saw Moxley and Darby on Dynamite not too long ago. So they seem to have a few different options. We'll see what direction they go in. Let's take a look at what you guys thought of the show, because we've got the Twitter poll here on the screen. Well, I mean, there it is. It's pretty self-explanatory. We're already over 20. We're 2,200 votes already. That poll's not even been up for, let's see, what time is it? About an hour. 2,200 votes. 90% thumbs up. 9. Actually, just shy of 10. 10% thumbs down. So that is a decisively positive score. And the opposite of the Super Showdown poll results. Do I still have that here? Let me check and see here. I might actually still have that. Let's take a look. No, that's a different one. That's Dynamite. Man, I was hoping I can pull up the Twitter poll for Super Showdown, which was not good. It was actually almost like the inverse of this poll. It was like 7% thumbs up. So it was nice to have a show that didn't set my blood pressure sky high. This was a very enjoyable professional wrestling show. I thought this was an excellent show from top to bottom. There were a few things that weren't so great. The women's match I wasn't a big fan of. I really wasn't a big fan of the opener either between Hager and Dustin. I just thought it was the very definition of an undercard match. I would not have opened the show with that. I thought that was a minor misfire, but it didn't kill the show or anything like that. But the key matches that had to deliver, I think, all delivered. That tag team championship match was outstanding. I thought the main event was very good. I thought the Cody match was good. I really enjoyed Pac and Orange Cassidy. And Darby Allin and Sammy Guevara, in Enough or Nothing, that may have been that may have been my first or second favorite match on the entire show. You know, it's hard for me to put that above the tag title match, but I think the tag title match and the Darby match were probably my two favorite matches of the show. If I had to grade this on a scale of 1 to 10, I think for this show, I would be willing to go, I think I might be willing to go up to an 8.5. I would say about an 8.5. You know, my standards are very high. To get a 9 or a 9.5 has to just, you gotta really just blow me away. You gotta take that Dustin Hager match off. Then maybe you get to a 9. But I'd say 8.5 sounds about right. So anyway, let me know what you think. Keep voting in the poll. It's going to be open for another few days. And what we'll do here now is see what you guys thought. We'll take a few calls. Let me just check real quick here and make sure we're all caught up on the Super Chats. I believe we've got a few more here to go through. Matt Ferguson with the $10. Tech Nation with the $5. And what do we have here? Jim Ross says, that looks like the Chick-fil-A logo on Nyla's gear. Excalibur says, Nyla definitely does not support Chick-fil-A. I didn't even hear that. I must have missed that. That is actually funny. Mom Jeans 2, thank you for the $20. Said, I've enjoyed listening to you over the last few years. Guess I'll throw down some cash along with everybody else. Well, thank you. Brian with the $2. Super Chat Party, he says. JWD82X with the $5. Hangman and Cody storylines have been the best in quite some time. It's hard to disagree. Yeah, look, to be fair, I've enjoyed the Otis and Mandy story on SmackDown. Now, the question is, can they pay it off? That's about the only story in WWE right now, at least on that SmackDown show. I mean, I like Edge and Randy Orton, what they're doing there. But I'd throw Otis and Mandy in there. It's one of my favorite stories. Jacob Donnelly, thank you. $5. And Deco Rug with the $2 Super Chat. That me? I think that was me. I think I just beeped. So we got all the lines are jammed up here. We may as well dive right into some of your calls before we wrap up here tonight. Getting late here on a Saturday night. Let's go to 609.
Hey, Solomon, it's Dave from South Jersey. How you doing?
Hey, Dave. What's going on?
Not much. Really enjoyed the show tonight. Just almost felt like a complete, it was a complete juxtaposition from what we got on Thursday.
You think?
Just I all just all the decisions made from top to bottom. I feel like this is the definition of what you do when you go with what the fans want versus the sake versus swerving for the sake of swerving because no one was expecting it. And you can see it in the audience just by the reactions tonight. I thought the tag match was excellent. Probably the best tag match I've seen this year by far. I really thought the just the pacing of it, the story that they told, even the tease at the end was great. I thought Moxley winning the championship was also, the right call, even though Jericho was doing some great stuff being the champion.
Oh, he's
I
been
just felt like
fantastic.
this,
Yeah, he's been fantastic.
yeah, I felt like this was a way of AEW going, okay, we're going to establish all of our newer stars, even with the Sammy and Darby Allin match. It felt like, hey, this is a showcase of what AEW has to offer. We're not just a place for, stars from other companies to come over, but we can actually make our own homegrown talent. And then here's what we're going to do to push them to the forefront. And it was so refreshing to feel great at the end of a pay-per-view like this.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was. They really, with the young guys on that roster, I really see big things in their future. And as long as they keep doing what they're doing, I think they're on the right path. Again, Hangman, Darby, Orange Cassidy, how high can he go? Who knows? But, they have these young guys that, the larger audience does not know. They've not been exposed to them before. But I think, bit by bit, week by week, if they keep getting these kinds of reactions, hopefully 6 months and a year down the line, they'll look at them as bigger stars than they are now. But they know their audience. I will give them a lot of credit. They know their audience. They've done a good job of catering to that audience. Is there a ceiling for that audience? It looks like the ceiling on Wednesdays is probably around 900,000. When you factor in the DVR stuff, it's over 1 million. It's probably 1.2, 1.3 million. NXT also, you got to factor in the DVR stuff. So they've got to find a way to grow that. But they know what they're doing. I will give them credit. They know their audience well, and I thought tonight was a home run for them.
Yeah, I agree. I guess the only cons would have to be, unfortunately, I agree with you, was the women's title match. It was just in the death spot. It would have taken a lot for them to try to bring the crowd back after that, great tag match in the beginning.
Anybody in that spot was going to die a death. And the only match I think that might not have is if they put Pac and Orange Cassidy on after that tag team title match. I think they probably could have held the crowd. But anybody in that spot was just, I mean, I could just imagine them backstage watching that going, shit. What other, I mean, what other reaction could you have? How are you supposed to follow that up? 30 minutes of people just going
Yeah.
crazy. Everyone's exhausted. You need a come down, and unfortunately for them, that's what it was. And then they had those two spots where they almost killed each other.
Yeah, that's true. I just have one question. I know you got tons of calls to get
Sure.
to. I'm just trying to figure out exactly where they're going to go with this Hangman story. Like you said earlier, the reaction he got in Chicago, I mean, he was white hot. And it kind of feels like, okay, they're going to make this call where he may turn on Kenny, but I don't know if, and me speaking as a fan, I'm really ready to boo Hangman at this stage and point, but I don't know where else this story could go. If the only thing that makes sense to me, I mean, you kind of touched on this earlier, is if Marty were to somehow come along, because there is some history there, when they had their big civil war in New Japan between Bullet Club, it was Cody, Marty, and Hangman, and it was really Kenny and the Bucks, and that was a real big split there. So I was curious to see where you thought that storyline could go, and do you think that with his win tonight, that probably is going to push up MJF into the forefront to be the next, probably the biggest heel that AEW has?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think he's already well on his way. We'll see if he's going to challenge Moxley next. The Marty stuff is interesting. I hadn't really thought about that whole split from the Bullet Club thing in New Japan. I don't know if Marty's coming in. So that was just me seeing him do the chicken wing and the kick to the knee and thinking, hey, maybe that's a sign of something. It's also could be just him giving a shout out to his boy, and Marty's not coming in. But I think with Hangman, you can go a couple different ways. I mean, you see how over he is. Maybe you hold off on any heel turn and just see where it goes. See if he becomes even more popular. And again, they've done a pretty decent job, I'd say, of listening to their audience so far. If the audience doesn't want to boo him, why turn him? And maybe just keep building him up as this, baby face with kind of an attitude. And at some point, maybe he can challenge for the championship. Or it seems like this is building to the inevitable split. I don't see Kenny going heel. If one of them has to go heel, it's probably Hangman. And then he just becomes the ultimate heel. If he could find a way to get the people to boo him, he'll probably have to stop drinking beer. Otherwise, they'll keep cheering him. Maybe he'll drink, bottled water. Or he'll drink fucking milk or something, get people to boo him. I don't know, but the other option is to go in the polar opposite direction. You turn him heel, you make him this vicious, completely unlikable prick who eventually could challenge Moxley, and maybe he's the one to take the title from Moxley later in the year. We'll see. They have options, though. They have options. Who knew? Who knew in August when he was wrestling Chris Jericho that Hangman Page would be one of the most popular guys in the entire roster? Let's go to Philly 484.
Hello, Monster. How's it going, man?
Good. Who am I talking to?
Ryan from Reading, PA.
Hey, Ryan, what's going on?
Drink a little bit of whiskey myself. That's a whole other story.
Well, that's all. It's always a good option
Anyway.
on a Saturday night. Nothing wrong with that.
Hey, man. Nothing wrong with that at all. Phenomenal show, like always. It just seems like this last month of shows, with AEW has just been phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. I guess the main question now, I guess I have is, I guess you kind of threw it out there. Who's next for Moxley? I mean, I think Jericho is going to be touring with Fozzy. That might have been the reason why he might have lost the title. Because I know on his podcast, he's been hyping tour dates. So you kind of have to wonder. I mean, I guess MJF is still kind of out because I guess they're extending the storyline with Cody. So kind of wondering who would they throw in there, you think?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not 100% sure, and I did hear about that tour. I didn't know if he was going to be gone long enough to miss, like a month of TV, or I'll have to take a look at the tour dates. I don't know exactly how long he's going to be gone for. Again, we'll see how things play out. Again, I've listed all the options already. I don't want to get into it again, but the options, they have a few different ones. Pac, don't forget Pac. Even I almost forgot him. Pac could rebound and he could be in contention as well. Where does Darby Allin fit into all this? As over as he is. So we'll see. We should get a better sense on TV this week of where they want to go with all that. Let's try the West Coast. Let's go to 425.
Hey, how you doing, Jason? It's Trevor Jackson from Seattle.
Hey, Trevor.
So happy to announce my 5 week sobriety from WWE. Feeling good. Good way to celebrate it with a decent show tonight, man.
I thought this call was going in a very different direction there for a second.
Nah, brother, it's just nothing but good vibes, man. It was my brother's first wrestling show that he ever watched tonight too.
Oh, what did he think?
So it was sick. He enjoyed it, man. Wrestling's always been an art form for me, and he kind of started to understand that when it was the Bucks and Omega tag team match. That was the match that kind of got him going. Then I had to explain to him the whole Orange Cassidy thing. That was funny. But it was just a great show, and he really liked it, and we're going to give it a try if they ever come to Seattle. Hopefully they come soon. But
Yeah,
yeah, it was just a dope show.
yeah,
Dope
no,
show.
yeah, no. It's it, it, the opinion that I'm seeing so far, and we saw it even in the poll when I put it up on the screen a little while ago. Overwhelmingly positive, and there probably are some people who didn't like it as much, but on the whole, people seem pretty happy. Look, I like a lot of you, have become very accustomed. You kind of take it for granted if you watch WWE. And you subscribe to the WWE Network, you get all the pay-per-views for $10. Some people don't even pay $10. Some people keep somehow getting the free months. I always say I'm the schmuck who's been paying $9.99 since 2014. And to be fair, I still think it's a steal. So I don't mind paying for it. I'm not looking to pirate it or anything like that. But, like, I have people telling me, hey, dude, I've never paid for the network. They just keep offering me free months. I'm like, how come they don't offer me anything? They never offer me shit. But you get used to getting all the pay-per-views for $10. They give you WrestleMania for $10, Royal Rumble, SummerSlam, all these shows. So it's a little jarring when I was kind of scrambling late. I was trying to get everything done before the pay-per-view started. And I realized I hadn't bought the show yet. I had remembered to do everything else and setting things up here in OBS and getting ready for the stream. And I said, shit, I didn't actually buy the pay-per-view yet. And I went to BR Live, because Fight was only for the international fans. If you were out of the United States, you could order the show through Fight TV. I went to Fight TV. I'm like, how come it's not listed? And then I realized, hey, you idiot, you're in the U.S. Of course, I could have used the VPN. I could have used my ExpressVPN. You could have used ExpressVPN with my code to spoof your location. But you know, we don't have to do that. So then I went to BR Live, and I see $49.99. And it was a little jarring at first, because I was, you know, I mean, I ordered the full gear show, and so I had already done that. But you don't realize, it's been a long time since you've been expected to spend $50. If you're in a different country, you still have to, but $50. And it makes you stop and ask yourself, you know, is this really worth it? Let's take a look at the card. You know, let's take a look at what's on tap here for the pay-per-view tonight. You really stop and ask yourself, is this worth it? You know, you're going to put down your money. You want to make sure that it's worth it. Now, of course, I'm going to order it. Of course, I have to watch the show, but I would have ordered it anyway. But it was just funny. Like, I stopped myself for a second. I said, shit, 50, I'm not used to this. This used to be commonplace. But now we've been spoiled these last 5 or 6 years where everything's $10. Nothing feels special anymore. You get everything for one price, and it doesn't matter if it's, you know, a B-show pay-per-view or a WrestleMania. So, man, I am losing my voice here. But we're not done yet. I'll do the show if I have no voice. I'll use sign language. I'll tap on the microphone here. We'll use Morse code. Let's take 219. It would help if I actually hit the talk button. There we go. 219.
Hey, so Macho, it's Dennis. How you doing?
Good. Are you in your car, Dennis?
I am. I actually just leaving the show now. I live right over the border in Indiana. I'll tell you what, it's a fresh air going and seeing AEW compared to WWE. 27 now, me and my best friend Mike, shout out to him. We were at the Raw, we were about 14 years old. When John Cena fought Kevin Federline that night.
Oh, jeez.
And we looked at each other and said, man, we're out of place here already.
Oh, my God.
Going to these shows, I was just talking to my buddies, a bunch of fresh air because getting a chance to actually be around people our age.
So on the whole, I mean, you were there live. Let me ask you this before you go on, because I mentioned this during the stream. That I noticed that people in the crowd seem to be wearing these LED bracelets. Did you have one of those yourself, or did you see that? The crowd was, like, lighting up all night.
So they LED bracelets, they were on the other side of the camera, and they were to, if you were facing, because I said, if you're facing the, I'm trying to think of how it would be. So the rings on my left, or the rings, the entrance on my left, across from me and to the right is where they had them. And it was weird, in the upper section, it was the corners that had them.
Okay, so you didn't have one yourself then?
I did not. A couple of my buddies had one.
Okay. Yeah, I just thought, at first I thought I was going nuts. I'm like, what am I looking at here? And then I said, okay, it looks like they probably gave them out. I didn't know if they gave them out to everybody or just people on the TV side. So that answers that question.
Yeah, so I don't know if it caught on the air, but when Moxley was doing his interview after the show, after his match, when he was doing his interview on the entrance, on the two giant LEDs, it was showing to recycle them. So I don't know if that caught the screen at all, but that was on the entrance ramp for the TVs there.
Well, let me ask you this, because we got all the lines jammed up, so I want to keep things moving. But anything that really stood out to you since you were there live, good or bad, you know, from being at the show tonight?
Yeah, so my biggest thing was, I heard the other day, and here's the question I was going to ask you. Cody Rhodes said Revolution could be the quote-unquote WrestleMania of AEW. Going into the show, I listened to a little bit of your review of AEW on Wednesday, caught a little bit about what you're saying about Lance Archer. My biggest surprise was there was no major spins or anything out of the ordinary. It looked like it was more of a blow-off show than anything else. So I was wondering what your opinion on what show do you think is going to end up being their quote-unquote big show?
Well, yeah, I mean, we didn't get any big debuts tonight, which I thought we might. So that was a little surprising. And, you know, now that you mentioned it, it did kind of feel like some of these things were blown off. I'm not convinced that we're done with MJF and Cody, so I don't think that's over. What could be their WrestleMania, though? I don't know that Revolution... I don't know. I mean, this is the first one. It doesn't really feel to me, you know, like it would be their WrestleMania, but I just assume that because All Out, for example, is like almost like an anniversary type show for them, that would feel to me like maybe it would be their big show over Labor Day weekend. I think it's too early to say there that they have a WrestleMania. You've got to wait until you're a few years in. WWE didn't have a WrestleMania until they were a few years in. Nobody knew WrestleMania was going to become this big, you know, annual thing. So I still think it's too early to tell. Here's what I think they need to do. Don't worry about having a WrestleMania. Okay, forget WrestleMania. All they need to do is keep doing what they've been doing. I think their pay-per-views have largely been pretty well received so far. People seem to be pretty happy with it. Just keep doing what you're doing. Make every show WrestleMania worthy. Every show should be a big deal because they've only got four of them. You know, WWE, yeah, they have WrestleMania, but they've got 12 shows a year plus all the Saudi shows. Right now, AEW has four big events. So they should focus on making all four of those events as big as they can possibly be. Because if people are paying $50 or $60 to watch this pay-per-view, you better give them a damn good show. Because that $50 does not go as far as it used to 20 years ago when everybody was paying, you know, whatever it was back then, $34.95 or whatever. You're asking a lot of people. So that would be my, not that they're asking for it, but that would be my advice. Brian, thank you for the $5.95 super chat, and Justin McKenzie for the $5. Aubrey Edwards, he says, was waiting for that pop when she sent the Inner Circle to the back during the main event. Yeah, Aubrey Edwards is, she gets big reactions when she's out there. She milks it a lot. I get the sense that she enjoys herself, and not every referee would be the same way. You know, some referees don't want to draw any attention to themselves. But she's become part of the show. So, you know, hey, what are you going to do? It is what it is. Let's go to 908. You're on the air.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing very well. Who do I have the pleasure of talking to?
So this is Walter from San Diego, even though it's a New Jersey area code.
Okay, I was going to say, I saw the 908. I said, I figured you were from Jersey.
Yeah, I know. It was a little... It's a little confusing, but anyway, I really enjoyed the pay-per-view tonight, but I love the way the angle played out with Moxley faking the eye injury. I thought it was really kind of cool that they did that. Even though there's a little bit to explain there, maybe in the details, I still thought it was cool. But, you know, I have to say, I'm disappointed to see Jericho's reign come to an end just because it was probably one of the most entertaining title reigns I've seen in a long time. To me, nowadays, you almost don't even care about title reigns. They don't even have an impact. And it made me think, like, when was the last time I even cared about a title reign ending? You know? I mean, maybe CM Punk.
I would say Thursday. Know, I got pretty animated after that title reign ended on Thursday.
Yeah, that I'm kind of trying not to think about that.
Yeah, well, I'll save that for later today when I record the sound off. But yeah, no, look, he was very entertaining in the role. I think they needed some big name to really establish that title and make people care about it. And when the time was right, he was going to drop it. And you can't deny the fact that Moxley's, you know, he's been over like gangbusters and he was the big baby face. And so this was inevitable. You know, they could have dragged it out a little bit longer, but it felt like the time was right. You know, you don't want to screw Moxley unless you have somebody debut. You could have had Archer maybe or somebody, but then, you know, I look, strike while the iron is hot. Moxley's over, go with Moxley, and he could always drop it to somebody else at Double or Nothing in May.
You're right. I think the one thing is Jericho's whiny promos coming back from this are probably going to be gold.
Oh yeah, yeah. Look, he'll find a way to make it work. You know, I'm sure he'll be flipping his lid. He'll be losing his shit on TV this week. So, I'm sure that this is not the last that we've seen of him. You know, either going after the title or, yeah, look, he may get the belt back at some point in the not too distant future. But if he is going to go away to do music, which I forgot about the tour. I mean, I guess that kind of makes sense that they would have to get that belt off him.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, man. Keep rocking it.
Thank you, Walter. Walter, not from Jersey. He made that very clear. Not from Jersey. So let's, I think we had another Jersey caller here. I was going to go to him next, and I think he may have dropped off. So let's go to, well, it's kind of close to Jersey. Go to Connecticut, 203.
Hey there, so I'm on to Adam Myron. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Hey, yeah, pretty rough night tonight.
Hold on. Oh, wait. All right. You sound very distant. So I don't know if are you in like a tunnel or something?
No, I just got my new iPhone today. So,
there we go. That's better. That's better.
That's pretty good. Hear me out of here. So. I got a little statement to say before I ask a couple of questions. Number one, I seriously doubt that WrestleMania is going to be canceled due to the coronavirus that you talked about earlier. So
no, well, I didn't say it was going to be canceled. No. I didn't say WrestleMania was going to be canceled due to coronavirus. But Stephanie McMahon was talking about it earlier this week. She was talking about it a few days ago because she was asked about it, and she said that they are talking about what measures they may have to take, because you're going to have all these people coming in from all over the world. And look, something really drastic would have to happen in these next 4 weeks for them to cancel it. They're not going to cancel it, but it could impact some of the events that are going to be going on that week. And you may have people who are flying in from other countries who have tickets who, look, they're talking about travel restrictions. So if they're shutting off travel from certain countries, there are people who maybe have bought tickets who are not going to be able to come in for WrestleMania. So that, I think that is a very real possibility.
Well, the real possibility, I seriously doubt they're going to cancel the whole weekend because of that. I seriously doubt that. So that's enough there. But I got a couple of questions coming out of this event tonight.
Sure.
And the first event is this. First off, what a heck of a show tonight, and it was pretty awesome. And, I mean, what do you think about Hangman Page? Where is this story going to go from here between Hangman and Kenny Omega, like you talked about?
Well, I think it's building to an explosion between the two of them, and Hangman's just going to kind of get fed up with him at some point. And actually, I think the match at Double or Nothing is going to be Hangman against Omega. They'll probably drop the belts before then, and I think it'll be a singles match between the two of them over Memorial Day weekend.
Well, that should be a fun, interesting story. I can't wait to see that. And third off, and this will be my last question before I let you go. I just heard the announcement that the type of War Games match is going to be held in March in Newark, New Jersey, called the Blood and Guts Cage 2 Cage version. Is this another version of War Games that they're doing? What are they doing here?
Yes. So I talked about this earlier. They announced that on the 25th, they're going to have the two rings and the one cage. And since they can't call it War Games, they're going to probably call it the Match Beyond. But basically, it's going to be their version of War Games.
Well, you know, I should have called this one. Lethal War Zone.
Lethal War Zone?
Lethal War Zone.
Yeah, the Match Beyond, I think, is fine. The Match Beyond has, you know, they used the Match Beyond for War Games back in, 87, I think. So, yeah, look, Cody likes to go for the old school vibe, so he's going to call it the Match Beyond. It doesn't matter what the match is called. Right. Who cares what the match is called? They're going to have a War Games match on free TV.
Well, it's going to be awesome, I'll tell you that much. All right, well, I have a couple of questions, but I got one more. And I got one more question, and that should be it for tonight. I know that Matt Hardy is free. Do you think there could be a chance that Matt Hardy should come to AEW, maybe?
Sure. Yeah, he's free. He could do whatever he wants. He's officially free as of an hour ago, unless he secretly re-signed and we just don't know about it.
All right. Well, I'm going to let you go, my friend, because you got to get a long sleep and you have a big one night. And by the way, get the word out to the monster. It's going to be hashtag Wrestle Weekend 2 Ahoy this April. Wrestle Weekend. Get it out there, man.
Wrestle Weekend? Okay. You got it. Absolutely. Wrestle Weekend. You heard it, people. Wrestle Week. I don't know what that is, but Wrestle Weekend. Get the word out. All right. It's amazing how animated people can be at 1:10 a.m. He was in Connecticut, so he's in the same time zone as me. He's a lot more animated than I am right now. Let's go to 619. I know that area code. 619.
Yo, this is Brandon in San Diego with the San Diego area code.
Hey, Brandon.
Hey, been listening a long time. First time I've ever called in. I just wanted to say that I thought the pay-per-view tonight was awesome. I've been enjoying AEW more than I've enjoyed wrestling in a long, long time. And even though the pay-per-views being $50 it's kind of rough when you're used to paying $10. After watching the show, I'm not really that disappointed about it. I had a really good time for about 4 hours for $50. That's not a bad deal in my mind. Yeah. Anyway, keep doing what you're doing. I appreciate everything.
Thank you, my friend. I appreciate the feedback. So that was another, happy customer, I guess, for AEW tonight. They know their audience. They pace the show well. I disagree with the opening match as far as what went on first, but the card top to bottom, look, I feel like I got my money's worth out of it. If I have to pay $50 four times a year for their shows, could be worse. As long as they keep the quality at the level that it's been, they get no complaints out of me. But I think people are more picky now because, again, there's so much wrestling. There's more wrestling on television, on the internet, on YouTube. There's so much wrestling now, more than ever before, that people are very selective. They're very picky about what they pay for. They're very picky about their time. So you've got to put something out there that people think is worth their time and worth the money that they're plunking down. It's not easy. You might think, it's never been easier for a wrestling promotion to find an audience and, to be accessible to people. Yes, but there's also a downside to having this much wrestling because not everybody can fit it all in. I'd love to watch MLW every week and add that to the list of shows that I review. I don't have time. I get emails every few weeks, every week from people. How come you don't watch ROH? How come you don't watch Impact? How come you don't watch MLW? How come you don't review this? How come you don't review that? Because I have a life. I need to have some semblance of a life. There's only so many hours in the day. I have a full-time job on top of this. I can't fit it all in. I try. Watch WWE because, good, bad, or indifferent, that's what people want me to talk about. I think people want me to talk about WWE more so because they don't watch anymore. So they rely on people like me who do. So I watch that, NXT, AEW. I still watch NWA Power every single week. It's, an easy hour of wrestling to get through, but that's about my limit right now. So you got to really, people are very selective. But if AEW can keep putting on shows like this, I think they'll do well. Let's take a couple more before we wrap up here. 917, you're on the air.
Hi, Solid Monster.
That's me.
Hi, I'm a first-time caller from New York City. I just want to say I like your show. I enjoyed the pay-per-view tonight. And you had a great effort tonight against PAC, so I enjoyed that as well.
I put a lot of work into that.
Yes, that indeed you do. I do want to say, though, that I do have to ask, with the announcement of Lance Archer coming to AEW and, of course, Brody Lee incoming, whenever that may be, who do you think has a higher ceiling?
That's a good question. AEW. Yeah, well, let me let you go and answer that. That's a good question. Brody Lee or Lance Archer? How old is Brody Lee? Somebody, let me know in the chat. I know Lance Archer is 42. And I'm going to talk more about him on the podcast. I was going to say tomorrow, technically later today, episode 641. I'll talk a little bit about Lance Archer. I don't think Brody Lee is too far behind him. I don't think he's in his 40s yet. Maybe he is 40, actually. So the point is, they're probably closer to the end of whatever their prime runs would be than the beginning of it. So I think they only have a limited window left. When they come in, if they both come into AEW, we know Lance Archer's on his way in. Brody Lee, we'll see. I think they're going to have to act quickly. You know, whatever they're going to do with them, you know, do it now. Don't wait too long. Brody Lee, I would imagine, when he comes in, is going to have a lot to prove. He's going to have a chip on his shoulder. He's going to think to himself, you know what? For the longest time, I was sitting in the back. I was sitting in catering. I was watching everybody else get opportunities. Pass me by. They never gave me the ball to run with it. I want to take that ball, and I want to shove it down their fucking throat. That's what I think his attitude would be. That's what my attitude would be if I were him. Unless the guy has no self-confidence whatsoever, he's going to be out to prove something. So I'm very curious, if he does sign and come in, what they do with him. Does he just get tacked onto the Dark Order? Does he come in on his own? Does he change his look? I don't think he needs to be coming in wearing the wife beater and the jeans, looking all scruffy. You know, I'm not even saying shave the beard off, but like, he's got to change his look up a little bit. He's got to just freshen up. This is going to be his chance to really show people what he's capable of. Or he's going to prove Vince McMahon right. Vince McMahon never saw him as a star. He never saw what's so appealing about this guy. That's what Vince McMahon thought of him. When he came back from his wrist injury last year, I don't know how many of you remember this. He had a match at Fan Access over WrestleMania weekend with Dominik Dijakovic, okay? Donovan Dijak. And they had a match at Access that I know I watched it, so it must have been uploaded to YouTube or something. But I remember watching that match and thinking, that was a really fun, really good match. And he kind of looked like he was out to prove something. He posted something on his Twitter that he posted like a letter to the fans saying something very similar to that effect. And then I remember reading reports that Vince McMahon hated that match, that he saw the match, he hated it, and it was almost like that sealed his fate. And I thought about that and I said, this guy, Vince McMahon, he's obviously seeing something very different. He just doesn't see anything in Luke Harper. And so he never really used him again. He brought him back to do some stuff with Rowan against Daniel Bryan and Roman Reigns, but then we really, outside of that, never saw him again. Ceiling-wise, again, because they're both older, I think the ceiling is, I think, probably at the same level for both of them. I just don't know what we're going to get from Brody, because we really haven't seen him have the chance to run with the ball yet. Archer last year, when Davey Boy left and he got the singles push in New Japan, we saw a side of him that we had never seen before. He was killing it in New Japan. I remember when he opened the G1 against Will Ospreay and they tore it up. They had an excellent match at the beginning of the G1. Then he had that run with the U.S. title. He was killing it. You put a gun to my head and said, who do I think has the bigger ceiling? Probably Lance Archer. I think Lance Archer is probably going to go farther. I think he could have more success. But I just can't give you an honest assessment until I really see the new and improved Brody Lee, and we really get to see what this guy is made of. You know, I could watch him the first time and think, eh, all right, that's it, you know? That's what we've been missing out on? Or maybe he goes in there and he blows us away. I hope he gets the chance. Apparently AEW is coming to his hometown on March 18th next month. That could be the night that he debuts. We'll find out. We'll know soon enough. Let's go to, I believe this is Vegas, 702.
What's up, Solid Monster? It's Christian from Vegas.
Hey, Christian.
How you doing today?
I'm doing very well. I'm getting tired. It's getting late here in the night, but I'm glad you made it through, because we have all the lines jammed up here right now.
Yes, thank you. I'll keep this quick. Since Moxley is now AEW champion, he's also IWGP United States champion. I know there's no official relationship between AEW and New Japan, but since Moxley's still able to work out his deals with his appearances, what are the chances we're going to see double champion versus double champion with Moxley fighting Tetsuya Naito, and maybe even seeing Shooter in the back holding both belts?
Moxley and Naito, that would be an interesting match. I don't know politically how that's going to play. I am a little surprised they put the title on Moxley because he is the U.S. champ in New Japan, and it looks like he's probably going to be feuding with or having a match with Zack Sabre Jr. It almost seems beneath him in a way. I mean, I'm not to take anything away from Zack Sabre Jr. I mean, I know some people hate the guy's guts. He's very easily hateable. In fact, one of our mods in the Facebook group, Jeff Lippman, I know is not exactly the biggest Zack Sabre Jr. fan. Shout out to Jeff. But, you know, Moxley and Naito, look, he's got his own deal with New Japan. Whatever match New Japan wants to do, you know, he'll be in. Champion versus champion, though, becomes very interesting. We just saw that with Jericho and Tanahashi. And they were talking about maybe that could lead to a relationship between AEW and New Japan, and it doesn't look like it's leading to anything right now. So I don't know how that's going to play out, but Moxley has his own deal. So the only thing he is not permitted to do, apparently, is he cannot wrestle for New Japan if New Japan comes to the U.S. So if New Japan comes here, they're going to be at Madison Square Garden, August 22nd. The same night as NXT TakeOver, I think up in Boston. Moxley cannot wrestle on that MSG show. Jericho cannot wrestle on that MSG show. As far as I know, that's the only restrictions they have. As long as the Japan shows that they're on don't interfere with an AEW event, they're free to do whatever the hell they want. So that's a New Japan decision if they want to make that match. And let's go to 773.
Hey, Salamonster, how you doing today?
I'm doing well. Who am I talking to?
This is Robert from Hammond, Indiana. Was at the show this evening and just wanted to call in. I've been a longtime listener. Been listening for about 3 years and get basically all of my wrestling news from you. Don't watch WWE anymore. Stopped watching after WrestleMania 30 and AEW. Just started making me feel like a fan again. So luckily I was able to take my 9-year-old son to his first wrestling pay-per-view tonight. And we got to say that show was amazing. The crowd was insane throughout pretty much the entire show, with the exception of the women's match, but that was just because of the match that, you know, went before it. But it was a great show. And obviously I lost my voice from it, but my son absolutely loved it. Yeah, that the tag match was ridiculous. I absolutely loved it. And I just wanted to call in. Thank you for all of your hard work. You watch a lot of wrestling, so I don't have to anymore, but I definitely fell in love with AEW and NWA too. But you know, they make me feel like a wrestling fan again. But you know, I've been going to shows for over 25 years. And this show, if it wasn't the best show I've ever been to live, it's definitely one of the top, I would say top three that I've ever been to live. It's this tonight show was great.
Wow. That's very cool. And I've heard from a couple of other people tonight who were there as well. And they echo the same thing that you're telling me now. Everybody who went there seems to have had a good time.
Yeah. The only negative thing that happened, it had nothing to do with the show, was C2E2, the Chicago was a comic expo. That was at the McCormick Place right across the street, and the parking lot was completely full, and we had to park in a lot that was a 30-minute walk away. And going back from the show, walking downtown Chicago in some really dark areas, to get to a parking lot, it was like, even my son was like, "Dad, no, just get real close to me." You know, I'm playing the tough guy, and I'm playing John Moxley, but deep down inside, I'm like, "Dude, I'm terrified."
Well, that's what you know. But that's when you call like an Uber or something just to get you back to your car.
No, well, Yeah, honestly, I even thought about that. I even thought about taking a cab because there were a couple of cabs out there. But I just kind of figured to myself, I was like, you know what? There has to be other people going to this lot that's way the hell out there. I'm just going to follow the crowd and pretend I know what I'm doing. And it worked. I mean, you know, there was a bunch of people. Oh, yeah, we're in lot B. I'm like, yeah, I am too. I'm just going to follow you guys. And, you know, but those little LED lights, it was funny because they kept, you know, at the show, they kept saying, oh, everyone, you know, it's not going to work. When you get home, just put it in these little recycle bins and, you know, you really shouldn't take them out. And my son's like, Dad, I really want to keep it. I was like, son, just put it inside your jacket. I'm going to keep mine too. And got home. They're still lit right now. So Yeah, it was a great show. And those little LED lights, actually, they added a lot to it because when the lights went out and, you know, all those little LED lights were shining, it's like it reminded me of an old school concert where people had lighters and they were, you know, just lighting the way and it was a really cool visual with some of the effects that were going on within the show.
Yeah. You know, it reminded me of, Wyatt, you know, when the people would put the lights on their phones and have the Firefly stuff in the crowd at the WWE shows, when Bray Wyatt would come out, it kind of surprises me that WWE hasn't done this kind of gimmick before, like at WrestleMania or something where they hand out stuff like that to some of the fans on the camera side. I'm surprised mm-hmm. that AEW sort of beat them to the punch because normally that's the sort of thing that you would expect them to do. But watching on TV, I noticed that I asked somebody earlier about it. I was curious. I said, were they bracelets? What was it? He didn't get one because he wasn't on the camera side. Apparently, only if you were on the camera side is, according to him, those are the people who got them. But on TV, they came across great. It was very, very noticeable.
Yeah, yeah. I did notice on the camera side or, you know, where the hard camera is, I didn't see anyone with anything lit over there. It was, you know, it is just a little wristband that you put on just like a watch. Actually, and you know, first my son, because they were on the seats, you know, when you go sit down, my son was like, what is this? I was like, I don't know, just put it on, you know, maybe, you know, we'll just keep it. And like, then once the show started,
like
it started lighting, you know, lighting up. What's that?
it's like a saw trap, and then Jigsaw is going to come out and sing you a riddle.
Yeah, that would have been bad.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I've been to 10 WrestleManias in my life and yeah, it really would have been cool if they would have, you know, kind of jumped the gun to do something like that for the people. But yeah, I was really happy that it happened today on my son's first, you know, wrestling pay-per-view. And I mean, coming home, he had a huge smile on his face. Once we finally got to the car, I threw your show on YouTube and just, you know, played it on the Bluetooth the entire drive home. And Dad, my son was like, Dad, I remember that then this and this happened. I was like, yeah, I mean, he was just reliving the entire show as you were doing the play-by-play.
That's great.
So, you know, you provided a pretty cool moment for me as a, you know, proud father, you know, with a 9-year-old. I mean, I didn't go to my first show until I was 18 and I was never able to go with my dad. You know, it was my brother who was cool enough to take me to the shows, you know, until I met a group of friends in you know, high school and early college that, you know, that was our thing. We go to WrestleMania every year and every show that showed up in Chicago, we would be there. So this is kind of me passing the torch now that I fell in love with wrestling again, that I get to do that for my son. And it's an amazing feeling for me, you know, coming back to wrestling after all these years. And knowing that I'm passing it down to my son, who absolutely loves it right now.
That's great. That's awesome, man. I'm glad you were able to share that story. And anything else before I let you go?
No, I just want to say once again, thank you for all you do. Because of you, I stay in the loop of everything wrestling. And I know that there's at least 5 hours of wrestling I don't have to watch every week and then
That's
some
right.
pay-per-views, but I definitely watch, you know, AEW, I watch Dark, I watch Power, and that's all I need. And then I listen to you, you know, usually when I'm working, I just throw my earbuds in, and every podcast you put out, I listen to, and thank you for all the work you do.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate that. That means a lot.
All right, have a good night.
All right, you too. So nice father-son bonding experience tonight at the pay-per-view. I think I went to my first show, let's see, 1987. Yeah, it was probably right around Christmas. Right around Christmas, just after Christmas time, 1987, Madison Square Garden. Main event, Intercontinental Championship, Randy Savage against the Honky Tonk Man, Jimmy Hart, suspended above the ring in a shark cage. I was scared shitless. He looked like he was 50 feet in the air. I'm afraid of heights, and I'm looking at this guy in the cage. Cage was probably 10 feet off the ground. But I remember looking at that going, oh my God, he's going to fall, he's going to die. I must have been, what was I, 5 years old, 6 years old, something like that. Days gone by. Let's take, got to take this call here, because he contributed a bomb earlier in the stream, 516. You're on the air.
Hey, Jason, it's Jared. How you doing?
It's Jared. Mr. Mysterio, how are you, sir?
I'm good. How you doing?
I'm good.
All right. Hey, Luchasaurus versus Brody Lee, I think that'd be a great match. Two 300 pounders that know how to wrestle, that can move like that, I'd pay to see that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, hey, Luchasaurus and Lance Archer.
Yeah, or Lance Archer, too. Jason, that woman that was helping sing Judas with when Jericho came out,
yes,
she's appeared on a bunch of his albums as backing vocals.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I didn't know. I thought it was just some kind of choir they brought in for the purposes of the show. Yeah. I didn't know that there was any connection there.
I think she's just a studio musician that helps with the backing vocals. That's it.
Okay. Well, I thought she did a great job. I thought it was a nice little touch. Personally, I would have thought it would have been cooler if they got that girl from YouTube that I told everybody about earlier, Mariah Page. They got to get her in there at some point because her rendition is awesome.
Yeah, and I didn't realize that Fozzy goes on April May. They have an April May tour, so I guess the right thing to get the belt off of him. But I'm sure he'll still be cutting vignettes from someplace around. He'll be gloating that he's touring, and he'll still be doing vignettes on Dynamite. Going at the Moxley or something like that. I don't think Moxley needs a belt, but okay, I'm for it. I thought it was a great pay-per-view tonight. It could have been better. It could have been a lot worse. I mean, I wouldn't pull up that type of money to watch any WWE pay-per-view. So I thought it was a good showing, and I thought the Cody and MJF match was great, and I also thought the tag team match with the Bucks and Paige and Omega were. You know, it was very, very, very solid, and I like the fact that the Bucks were kind of healing it up a little bit. So those are my thoughts. I know you got a lot of calls to go, so I will listen to you tomorrow.
Awesome. Thank you, my friend. I appreciate it, as always.
Thanks, Jason. Bye.
All right, take care. So let's do one more here. This guy's been waiting a long time. Let's go to, this must be a Florida number. We have Florida Man. Florida Man, I believe, is on the line, 407.
Hello?
407, you're on the air.
Jason, hello.
Hello.
Hello, Jason. Hit the talk button. Jason.
I'm here.
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you.
It's Glenn, what's up?
Hey, Glenn, what's going on?
Okay, first of all, I'm so glad you took my call after, I think it was two calls ago. So I went to NXT TakeOver War Games last year. NXT does the wristbands, which is the same thing that you saw tonight in the AEW. So WWE does do it. They do it for the NXT shows. They don't do it for the main shows. So AEW didn't.
Well, here's the thing, though. You say they do it for the NXT shows. These are the glow. These are the glow bracelets. I've watched NXT every single week. I've never, ever seen them do anything like that at Full Sail.
I have one right now on my hand. I have it. And if you watch NXT TakeOver War Games, you could actually see some of the entrances. Look closely at the crowd, you'll see them. They might not be as bright as the AEW ones were, because I think they're a lot smaller than the AEW ones. But if you go back and watch NXT War Games to the 2019, that's a show that actually has all the wristbands. And how I got it was I was waiting in the to go inside, and some girl was just handing them out. Hey, would you like a wristband? They had a number that you would text to verify that that device is active. That's how they do it. Now, going to my question today, The Exalted One for the Dark Order is on its way. Who do you think the Exalted One is, if it's a female?
If it's a female? Oh, the female. Well, I mean, here's the thing. As far as I'm going to let you go, but the Exalted One could be a female, I guess. They've not made it clear if it's a male or a female, although they had that one segment where the voice was kind of distorted. It would have to be a woman with a really deep voice, which I guess is possible. Maybe she's a chain smoker. I'm going to assume it's not a female. Although it is kind of fun to think about, I guess, if it was a female. If it was a female, who would the Exalted One be? Well, Sonny just got out of jail. Maybe that's what they were waiting for. They were waiting for her to get out of the slammer. And now she's out of the pokey. She's free, I think. She's out on bond or parole or something like that. Maybe Sonny. Tammy Sitch is going to be the Exalted One. Who knows? I don't think the Exalted One is a female, so I don't think that's anything that we're going to have to worry about. Just to wrap up here, Helder, with the $1.99 super chat earlier. Brian, I want to make sure that I get to everybody here. Justin McKenzie, and thank you, Collateral Boy, and the Vipy Lorian, for subscribing to the channel. Well, this has been fun, guys. I enjoyed the hell out of this pay-per-view tonight. I enjoyed the hell out of this stream, and I enjoyed the hell out of each and every one of you in the chat, even the annoying ones. I'm kidding. And by the way, all the wrenches, all the mods, thank you to you guys for all your work. I appreciate it. I'm going to get a few hours sleep and wake up in a few hours, and I'm going to record episode 641 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off podcast, which you can find on all of the platforms that you see on your screen right there on the very bottom. So that'll be dropping sometime during the afternoon here on Sunday. And then I will be back for the AEW Dynamite stream Wednesday night. That'll be the first show post-Revolution, so we'll get a sense of where these stories are going here after the pay-per-view. And maybe Moxley will cut another promo on TV. Maybe we're going to see Lance Archer, or at least they were teasing that. So I'll be back live here on YouTube. Please hit the like button on this video if you have not already done so. And be sure to subscribe to the channel. I'm out of here. Until Wednesday night, when I see you back here live, be well, stay safe, and everybody definitely tune into episode 641 coming up in just a few hours. Take care, guys.